Good day. My name is Carmen, and I will be your event specialist today. At this time, I would like to welcome everyone to the web conference for PECO's September 2016 solicitation under DSP-3. All lines have been placed on mute to prevent any background noise. Please note that today's web conference is being recorded. You can ask text questions throughout the presentation. Locate the Q&A panel on the right-hand side of your screen and select All Panelists in the Send To box. Type your question in the open area and click Send to submit your question. We will address questions at the end of the presentation as time permits. If you should experience any technical difficulties during today's event, please press star zero on your telephone keypad to be connected with an operator. You can also use the chat panel to communicate directly to the host. Now at this time, I would like to turn today's program over to Chantal Lacoste from NERA. You may begin.
Thank you, Carmen. Good morning, everyone, and welcome again to this bid information session for the September 2016 solicitation under PECO's third default service program. I will be doing the first part of the presentation today, providing an overview of the program and of this particular solicitation, and then I will turn it over to Kathleen Orlandi for the presentation of the RFP process details. We also have representatives from PECO with us today to be able to address any questions that you might have at the end of the presentation. Before starting the presentation, just a little bit of housekeeping. Throughout the presentation, we'll be describing and referring to documents and agreements, and this is a note that these are summaries only and that these summaries are qualified in their entirety by my reference to the governing documents on this slide, and the governing documents are the Commission Opinion and Order for PECO's third default service program, and the docket numbers provided to you on this slide, and that opinion and order is dated December 4th, 2014. Also, a governing document is are the RFP rules, as well as the default service supplier master agreement, or what we will refer to it during this presentation as the Uniform SMA. Both of these documents were posted on August 2nd, 2016 for purposes of the upcoming solicitation. And you can find those documents and all relevant documents for the upcoming solicitation on the RFP website, and that's at pecoprocurement.com. Both Kathleen Orlandi and I are from NERA, and NERA is the independent evaluator for PECO's third default service program. And in this role, what we do is we are the main point of contact for bidders. We ensure that the RFP rules that have been approved by the Commission are followed. We ensure that the qualifications are evaluated equitably and fairly. We evaluate bids on a price-only basis and then present the results from the solicitation to the Commission. So in this presentation, after I finish the overview of the default service program and of the products in this solicitation, we'll have a brief discussion about the Uniform SMA, the contract, and the rates. And then I will turn it over to Kathleen Orlandi for a presentation of the RFP process details, some reminders about the website, and then we can open it up for your questions. So the default service program is a fully specified program to procure supply for default service customers. And those default service customers are those who either do not elect to take service from an electric generation supplier, or EGS, or customers that return to PECO after receiving service from an EGS. Supply for those customers during the program were through four solicitations. We're coming up to the last one in September 2016. And supply during the program was procured generally for the period from June 1, 2015 to May 31st, 2017, but there were some contracts that extended to November 2018. And in fact, one of the products in this solicitation does extend to November 2018. All contracts were full for full requirement service, and that includes energy capacity, ancillary services, certain transmission services, as well as alternative energy portfolio standards requirements. And we'll go into more details later on in this presentation. The default service customers are divided into four customer classes, namely the residential class for all residential customers, and then three classes for commercial customers, small commercial customers that have annual peak demand less than 100 kilowatts, medium commercial that have peak demand between 100 and 500 kilowatts, and then large commercial and industrial that have annual peak demand at 500 kilowatts or greater. In the next slide, we have the number of tranches that are procured for each of these classes. Now, the default load for each class is divided into a number of tranches, and each in the end represents a percentage that must be supplied by the default supplier of the default load for each of those classes. So you have those numbers here, including the 62 tranches for residential and the 24 for small commercial. And I called those two customer classes out because the products in this solicitation are for those two customer classes, residential and small commercial. When we refer to the products in the solicitation, we give a little bit more information through the label of the product than just the customer class. So the first portion of the label of the product is the customer class, so RES for residential, SC for small commercial. The second portion of the label is the duration of the contract in months. So in this solicitation, we'll be procuring 12 and 24 month contracts for the residential class, as well as 12 month contracts for the small commercial class. And all of those contracts starting date is going to be December 1, 2016. And that's the third portion of the label for the product. Now, a reminder that there are load caps. And a load cap is basically a maximum that a default supplier can supply for a given class. And that's set at 50% for the default service load for a given class at any point in time. So on these next couple of slides, just a little more information about the number of available tranches for each of the products in this solicitation, and for the load caps that apply. So on this first slide, there are the two residential products, so the 12 and the 24 month, with 12 and 9 tranches that are available for bid in this solicitation. The load cap is set at 50%. So if you remember a couple of slides back, there were 62 tranches for the residential class. So the load cap is 31 tranches, but you also have to subtract any tranches where supply would be concurrent with the tranches that are won for either of the products in this solicitation. In the next slide is the small commercial product. So there are 12 tranches available. In total, there are 24 tranches for the small commercial class, and therefore the low cap is just going to be 12, so 50% of the 24. Less any tranches that were won in the prior solicitation that would run concurrently with the tranches that are procured in the current solicitation. So we'll be giving a lot of detail on the RFP process later on in the presentation, but let me just fix ideas a little bit by talking about the schedule. The schedule is fairly compressed, so the part one window opens on August 30th. And the part one date, that is the date at which all the part one proposal materials are due, is a week later on September 6th. So that's the first part of the proposal. The proposals for this RFP are in two parts. And the second part then, the submission for the second part opens on the 9th of September after suppliers are notified whether they have been successful on the first part of the proposal, and that occurs on the part one notification date. Once the part two window opens, suppliers can submit their materials for the part two proposal, and the deadline for that is the part two date on September 15th. Bidders are notified whether or not they've been successful in the part two proposal process on the 19th, which is the part two notification date, and then bids are due the next day on September 20th. Now, one thing that occurs during the part two window is bid submission training, which is scheduled for the 13th, and that's where suppliers have an opportunity to practice the bid submission procedure and make sure there are no technical issues on their end. After the bid date on September 20th, the turnaround in terms of the commission decision is fairly quick. So we, as an independent evaluator, present the results of the solicitation in our report to the commission the day after the bids are due. And then the commission renders a decision on the results of the solicitation on the next day. So that's expected on September 22nd. And of course, without approval, that approval is necessary for the RFP results to take effect. As I mentioned in going through the schedule, we submit the confidential report and the commission issues a decision within one business day. Information that is made public regarding the solicitation is released 15 days after the close of the solicitation. That's a very kind of high-level overview of the two parts of the proposal submission process, the part one and the part two. As I said, we're going to be providing more detail on what exactly needs to be done to submit to the requirements of the part one and part two proposal. Now, the part one, part two proposal, the materials that you will have to provide, you can provide them almost exclusively online. The only portion that you cannot provide online is the pre-bid letter of credit, so the financial guarantees for the bids that you will be submitting. So that has to be submitted, the hard executed pre-bid letter of credit has to be submitted in hard copy. But any other information that you provide, any documents that are going to be supporting your proposal, as well as additional forms that we call inserts, all of that can be uploaded through an online portal so that you can submit your proposal easily. Now, just a note about the inserts. So those are typically Word forms that you will be able to fill out separately, that if you need to sign, you can print and sign and then scan and then upload those scanned insert signature and, sorry, those scanned inserts that have been signed back to the proposal submission website. Now, if you are new, you will have to request an account. And when you request an account for being able to use the proposal submission website, you will also receive a document with instructions. And that document will be called the addendum to the RFP rules. Retaining bidders don't have to ask for an account anew, but returning bidders will also receive that addendum to the RFP rules to provide additional information for submitting your proposal online. And where you can do all that, there's two ways of doing it. You can go directly to the proposal website, which is dscproposal.com. Or if you're more familiar with the information website, the RFP website, picoprocurement.com, there are a couple of links that allow you to easily access the proposal website. One is simply the last link on the navigation bar on the left-hand side of the RFP website. The other one is a button that's on the right-hand side, as indicated in this slide. So if you are going to be requesting an account, there's kind of three quick steps to get started in terms of getting all the documents that you will need and setting up your account. So the first step is to request an account again. Those would be for new bidders. Suppliers that already have an account, you don't need to submit a new request. So if you click the Get an Account tab, you will have a form to fill out with some basic information about the name of a representative, the company, and an email address as well as a phone number. And then we will be able to provide credentials for you to access the proposal submission website. So once you have those credentials, then you can log into your account. So if you click on the Part 1 Proposal tab, and you know, in time there will be a Part 2 Proposal tab once the Part 2 window is open, then you will have a link that you can click on that says log in here, and then you can provide your credentials, your username and password to be able to log in to the form. Now, the other thing that's important, and I mentioned that there were additional forms that were Word forms that you need to fill out and in some cases print, sign, and upload the scanned forms back into the proposal website. And you can download those forms on the Insert tab on the proposal website. And the inserts are divided depending on whether you have participated before and to what degree. So there is a link that provides all of the inserts that would be needed for new bidders. There is a separate link that provides the insert for suppliers that have previously qualified in a prior solicitation but are not currently default suppliers. So that's the second link. And finally, there are inserts that are done specifically for those that are already default suppliers. So you can click on the appropriate link and you will have all of the inserts that you may need for purposes of presenting your Part 1 proposal. So that's the quick overview of the proposal submission process. As I mentioned, we'll be going into more detail in a second. In the meantime, I'll just spend a little bit of time talking about the contract and the rates and issues that are related to these. So under this third default service program, PICO is using the Uniform SMA, which is the governing document that we referred to at the very beginning. And that's the contract form that was developed through the uniform procurement process as envisioned by the Commission. Now, that contract is not a departure from what was used previously. Rather, it's in line with the risk and responsibilities that were in the prior SMAs under the Default Service Program 1 and 2. While we call that a uniform SMA, there are some provisions that are specific to each company that are included. For example, the contract assigns responsibility for generation deactivation charges to PICO, and PICO collects those charges through its non-bypassable transmission rate. Quick word about the credit requirements. And we mentioned these are the credit requirements for fixed price products. The products for both residential and small commercial classes are fixed price products, meaning that there is a fixed dollar per megawatt hour for all the components of the full requirement service that is provided under the terms of the SMA. So for fixed price products, the credit exposure to PICO is based on calculations of the mark-to-market exposure, and that's net of accounts receivable and accounts payable to the suppliers. The performance assurance requirements depend on a credit evaluation, and the criteria for that evaluation are specified in the uniform SMA. And the Part 1 proposal that you will be submitting will have as a requirement financial information so that we can provide a credit evaluation at the Part 1 proposal stage so that you know what to expect under the terms of the uniform SMA. Uniform SMA also has as exhibits the standard guarantee as well as the post-bid letter of credit that you can use to provide financial guarantees under the uniform SMA. We talked a little bit about the fact that the full requirement service includes the requirements under the Alternative Energy Portfolio Standards, or AEPS. So in particular, default suppliers are responsible for providing alternative energy credits, or AECs, during the term of the Uniform SMA, where each AEC is issued for each megawatt hour of generation from a qualified alternative energy system. So the requirements are provided on this slide on the table, and we remind you that each default supplier will specify the average cost for the non-solar tier 1, solar tier 1, and solar tier 2 AECs as part of the transaction confirmation process under the term of the Uniform SMA. And we will be reminding you of this obligation further on during the course of this solicitation, in particular as part of the certification that you make in the proposal submission process. Now, PECO has separately procured AECs, and those are, or some portion of those are allocated for the benefit of suppliers. Now, when I say that, I don't mean that PECO is transferring the AECs to suppliers, but rather that the obligations of default suppliers are reduced by the amount of these AECs. And prior to the opening of each Part 1 window for each solicitation, there is an announcement of the allocation of AECs to each tranche that will be procured during the solicitation. So this is our announcement here on the next slide. And these are then the allocation of the separately procured AECs for this solicitation. So these are in the Tier 1 solar column. A reminder that for default service customers, their rates and the rates for a class are determined on the basis of the prices that are determined through the solicitations and this RFP. For the residential class, the rates also include purchases by PECO of approximately 1.06% of the default load. More generally, rates incorporate a quarterly true-up as well as administrative costs, and you can get more detail by looking at PECO's GSA tariff. There's also a rate calculation model that is posted if you want to get more information, and the link where you can find that rate calculation model is provided on this slide. Finally, a quick word about the NYPA contract. PECO receives an annual allocation of capacity in associated energy from the St. Lawrence project, and this allocation for 2016 is 5.5 megawatts. That allocation is strictly for the benefit of residential customers, and what that means is that the supplier's residential tranches, which are just a share of the default load for residential class, that default load now excludes the 5.5 megawatt allocation under the NYPA contract. So that concludes our quick overview of some of the contract terms and rates. And I'll now turn it over to Kathleen Orlandi to take us through the RFP process details.
Thanks, Chantal. Great. So we can dive right into it on the first slide here. We provide a general overview of the RFP process. It's going to proceed in five stages or steps over the next 4.5 to 5 weeks. The first stage is the guarantee process. We're in the midst of it right now. Actually, the deadline was yesterday. It's an optional process. I'll cover it more on the next slide. But the first upcoming deadline for all bidders is the Part 1 proposal. It's submitted during a 5-day window that opens on August 30th. This is when suppliers submit financials and credit ratings in order to qualify under the SMA. Bidders that do qualify will be invited to participate in a bid submission training and also to submit a Part 2 proposal. Again, the Part 2 proposal is submitted during a window of 5 business days. And this is when the pre-bid security is due. And pre-bid security must be submitted in the form of a letter of credit. All bidders that have a successful Part 2 proposal and an acceptable letter of credit, we'll be able to submit bids on the bid date, which is September 20th. So as I mentioned, the guarantee process is already underway. It's an optional process that's for RFP bidders with corporate policies that preclude them from using the standard guarantee, which is an appendix to the uniform SMA. These bidders can submit an alternate form of guarantee, or bidders can also propose modifications to the language of the standard guarantee by submitting red lines. So any submissions that were received yesterday by 6 p.m. will be reviewed by PICO. And importantly to note, this process is applicable to bidders who want to use a guarantee, even if they didn't submit anything by the deadline yesterday, because any modification that PICO finds acceptable will be posted on the website prior to the Part 1 window, and any bidder can use any of the acceptable modifications from the process. So the first deadline is the Part 1 proposal. It's a requirement for all bidders. Everything required information and documents will be submitted online. So for purposes of filling out the Part 1 proposal, each bidder falls into one of three categories. The first is there are new RFP bidders. These are bidders that have not previously submitted a successful Part 1, or we say have not previously qualified under DSP 3. The second category is default suppliers, bidders who submitted a successful Part 1 and are currently serving tranches under DSP 3. And the third group are bidders that submitted a successful Part 1 proposal but are not currently serving tranches under DSP 3. So what's important to note is that bidders who fit into the second and third categories may be able to use an abbreviated Part 1 proposal process. This is because most information is submitted online. These bidders can log back into their form and simply review and confirm data that has been submitted in the past. There are a couple of exceptions to this. Bidders that are in Category 2 and 3 that want to rely on the financial standing of a different entity from last time will not be able to use the abbreviated process. Also, bidders for which there's been a change in corporate structure, maybe through a merger, would also need to resubmit all of the documents in the Part 1 form. So on this slide, we provide the first six requirements of the Part 1 proposal. I'll start with numbers 1 and 6, which are applicable to new bidders. The first requirement, number one, is to provide information related to the bidder. This includes the legal name and address, and also to provide contact information for the officer of the bidder and a representative. The officer is an individual who can sign the SMA and bind the bidder, and the representative will be the point of contact for the independent evaluator throughout the process. If we skip down to number six, this applies to new bidders that are applying under an agency agreement. These bidders have additional requirements that are outlined in the rules, and this includes providing a copy of such agency agreement and an opportunity to provide a draft officer certificate. So if we turn now to the orange flags, all bidders must respond to requirements 2, 3, and 4. Number two is to provide contact information for nominees if you wish. These nominees are additional people that will be copied on correspondence from the independent evaluator. Number three is to make a list of certifications and representations. This includes agreeing to the terms of the SMA. This document must be signed by the officer of the RFP bidder. And we note here that there are other certifications that will be due with the Part 2 proposal. And you can submit that document along with your Part 1 proposal certifications in the Part 1 window. This will allow the officer to sign both documents at one time. So number four, also applicable to all bidders, is to provide the latest quarterly financial statement and credit ratings. Credit ratings should be submitted from all three agencies if available, S&P, Moody's, and Fitch. The final requirement on this slide applies to bidders that are not currently suppliers and that have a guarantor. The Part 1 proposal requires that these bidders either submit all information needed to populate the guarantee at this time or sign a certification that we provide to you stating that if you are a winning bidder in this solicitation, you'll provide such information by 12 p.m. noon the day after the bid date. So we'll continue with the requirements. Number 7 applies to all bidders. The Part 1 proposal is an opportunity to submit red lines in Microsoft Word to the pre-bid letter of credit and the post-bid letter of credit. All of these red lines will be reviewed by PICO. The standard forms are currently posted to the website. The pre-bid is posted as an appendix to the rules, and the final version is due with the Part 2 proposal. The post-bid letter of credit is an appendix to the SMA and may be used by winning suppliers. Before submitting red lines, please check the list of acceptable modifications that is already posted to the website. This is a document, and it's a collection of all modifications that have been reviewed under DSP3. And if you find the modification that your bank would like to make in this document, you do not need to resubmit it to us because it will already be deemed acceptable. Number 8 here pertains to all bidders that are not default suppliers. And this is, again, these bidders must provide the information necessary to prepare the SMA or make a certification that they will submit such information by noon after the bid date if they have provisionally winning tranches at that time. So this is the final slide of the Part 1 requirements. Number 9 applies to new bidders only. Bidders in this bucket need to certify that they are a load-serving entity in PJM or will become one by the start of the supply period, December 1, 2016. Number 10, all bidders that will be relying on the financial standing of a foreign entity will need to acknowledge that there are certain documents required under the contract that will be due with the Part 2 proposal, and this is an opportunity for those bidders to submit drafts for review by PICO. And the final space in the Part 1 form, all bidders can justify any omission, explain to the independent evaluator why some information is not available. There's also a couple of spaces to provide any additional uploads that are pertinent to your proposal for our review. So all this information, the Part 1 proposal is due by Tuesday, September 6, 2016. And again, everything in the Part 1 proposal can be submitted online through an online form. On this slide, I'll provide some additional details on the roles. This can help select the appropriate people for your team. The officer of the RFP bidder must be able to undertake contracts, including the uniform SMA, and bind the bidder. This is also the individual that will sign all of the certifications throughout the Part 1 and Part 2 proposal. The rest of the individuals we will refer to as the bidder team. It's head up by the representative who will act as the main point of contact. This person receives all correspondence from us throughout the solicitation. And then there are up to 3 individuals that can be authorized to receive communications in addition to the representative. This means that these individuals will be CC'd on all emails, and so they'll receive all confidential information. That's why these individuals must be authorized. We require a signature by either the officer of the or the representative stating that they would like these individuals on copy. So all bidders that submit a complete Part 1 proposal will be notified whether they've qualified to submit a Part 2 proposal by Thursday, September 8, 2016. This is 2 days after the Part 1 date, and we call it the Part 1 notification date. In addition to a letter stating that you've qualified, you'll receive the following contents on this slide. One is the results of the credit assessment based on the financials that were submitted with the Part 1 proposal. You'll also receive a customized bid form. This bid form is customized because it It has the bidder specific load caps, and it comes with a document with instructions for how to submit their bid form and how to complete it as well. And the third document is two sets of confidential login information. The first set will allow you to log into the secure file transfer system during the bid training, and the second will work on the bid date. So similarly to the part one, the part two proposal must be submitted by all bidders. The online form is where bidders can upload certifications and representations that are due with the part two. This is also where RFP bidders that are not default suppliers and relying on the financial standing of a guarantor can upload the required intent letter of intent to provide a guarantee. And also, the bidders that are not default suppliers that are relying on the financial standing of a foreign entity will need to upload their additional documents that are required. These additional documents include a legal opinion from outside counsel. So in addition to supplying the documents on the online form, bidders must also provide a hard copy original executed pre-bid letter of credit to our offices in Philly. I'll provide the address on a later slide. And all of this information is due by Thursday, September 15th, 2016. Now, to provide a little more information about this letter of credit, as I mentioned, it must be submitted in hard copy, and it should be an amount of $250,000 per tranche for each of the fixed price products that you plan to bid on. So that means that the maximum amount of the pre-bid letter of credit is $8.25 million. That's $250,000 times the 33 available tranches between the residential and small commercial products. Some bidders that have bidder specific load caps will not be able to bid up to the maximum amount. So the letter of credit must be either in the standard form as currently posted to the website, or it can incorporate approved modifications that are posted to the RFP website. So I mentioned during the Part 1 proposal, bidders can submit red lines and ask for certain language edits to be accepted by PICO. And if they are, we will add them to the list of acceptable modifications and post it to the website so that any bidder can use every acceptable modification. So in this next section, I'll go through a series of screenshots that will show you how to submit the requirements. As Chantal mentioned, bidders will get an account by going to the proposal website. That's dspproposal.com. The URL is written on an earlier slide. And once you log in to that Part 1 proposal tab, the Part 1 form will appear, and it will look very similar to this. You'll scroll through the form, and you can enter information into fields that are provided. If you've submitted a Part 1 in the past, your information will be saved, and you can go through and update or review document information provided last time. Also, as you scroll through, there will be certain areas where you can upload supporting documents and inserts. On the sidebar, there's a scrolling toolbar that you can use to save your work as you go and log out. There's sort of nice links that take you to the top and bottom of the form as well. And it houses a few additional documents, including an overview of the review process, the addendum to the RFP rules, which you would have received by email earlier, and also the list of optional modifications to the guarantee that bidders that are relying on the standard on the guarantee can choose to elect. So as I mentioned, bidders will supply some information, such as the certifications, by uploading documents. We call these documents inserts. And there's separate forms in Microsoft Word format that are posted on the Inserts tab. These documents should be completed and uploaded to the appropriate spaces throughout the online form. And to note up front that some of these documents will need to be signed and notarized. So as Chantal mentioned, there are three zip files, and they correspond to the three different categories of bidders. And to note, the bidders that are in special circumstances, these include bidders relying on a foreign entity or applying under an agency agreement, have a few additional inserts, and these additional inserts can be found in a separate folder within each of the three zip files. So as you scroll through the online form, you'll come across spaces to upload documents, and you'll be able to match up the name and number of each insert. So you'll know where to upload the document, and you'll also know which documents are appropriate for you. So once you've scrolled through the form and updated all the information and you're ready to submit, you can do that by hitting the button at the bottom. Before doing that, you can click to print your form to PDF or print it out in order to review in hard copy or save to your files. Once you hit the submit button, you should be taken to a confirmation page, and that's the point when you know that it has been properly submitted to the independent evaluator, and it will then be reviewed. So once you submit the form, we receive a notification on our end, and we will begin to review your proposal immediately. During this review, we will lock you out of your account, so no more changes can be made during this process. Once we've finished reviewing, we will send you a notice. It will be either a complete notice saying we have all documents we need, or it will be a deficiency notice outlining the additional information we need and the timeline for when you must submit it. Once you receive that notice from us, your account will become unlocked and you can log back in, and you'll be given time, of course, to fix any issues with the proposal. So if you submit your proposal before noon on any business day, we will respond to you by 6 p.m. with a complete or deficiency notice. If you submit your proposal after noon, you'll hear back from us by noon the following business day. So the final stage of the process is the bid submission process, and I'll cover this in the next section. First, what is a bid? So a bid is a price in dollars per megawatt hour for one tranche of a product. I have three requirements here that make a bid valid. The first is that it will be automatically rounded to the nearest cent. Second, it must be binding until 6 business days after the bid date. It becomes binding as a representative of the bidder must sign a certification on the bid form. And third, it must be supported by sufficient security. So you will not be able to bid for more tranches than the amount of your letter of credit permits. Bids are evaluated by NERA, the independent evaluator, on a price-only basis. So for each of the three products, we'll stack off the bids that were received and complete from low to high, and we'll select the bids until we fill the tranche target for each product. On this slide, we provide a screenshot of the bid form. There's three different columns for each of the products available, and bidders can enter their prices in the blue rows. And each blue box represents a single tranche that you would be bidding on. In section one at the top, the bid form will keep a running total of all bids across all three products. And then below each product, you can see there's a running total also by product. Below that is a check that makes sure that you're not bidding above your bidder-specific load caps. As I mentioned, we will be providing you with a customized bid form that will be complete with your load caps there. So if you bid above the numbers in the load cap check, those green OK boxes will flip to being a red warning sign, letting you know that you need to decrease the number of tranches you're bidding. So on the bid date, that's September 20th, bids must be submitted between 10 a.m. and 12 p.m. noon. And all bids are submitted online through a secure file transfer system. Once you submit your bid, the independent evaluator will call you and confirm receipt within 15 minutes. In addition to letting you know we got your bid form, we'll also let you know of any issues that we find with the bid form, and you will be given you will be able to resubmit your bid form to correct for any issues, but a resubmission must be received before noon. And for that reason, we really encourage bidders to submit as early as possible. By 6 p.m. on that day, we will inform every bidder whether or not they are provisional winners. So we will be holding a training session. It's on September 13th in the middle of the Part 2 window, and it's a really good opportunity for everyone to practice. It's also nice to make sure that the secure file transfer system works on your company systems, and you can also call us. There's plenty of personnel available on that day, and you can ask us questions about how to complete the bid form or any other procedural type questions. So the bid day was on Tuesday. The next day, all RFP bidders that elected not to provide the information to populate the SMA and guarantee will need to provide that information by Wednesday by noon. On Thursday, we would expect the commission to issue a decision, and at that time, the independent evaluator will turn over to PICO the completed uniform SMAs and guarantees. PICO will execute first on Monday, September 26th, and on that day, they will fax and overnight the signed documents to each winning supplier, and winning suppliers should execute and return the uniform SMA and guarantee the following day, Tuesday, September 27th. This is also the deadline for RFP bidders to post any additional security needed under the contract. So certain information is released to the public about the results of the solicitation. This is the weighted average winning bid price by product and also the number of tranches of each product that was procured. The information is posted online to the RFP website 15 days after the bid date, and then the independent evaluator will send out an email to all the website registrants alerting them to this posting. So in this final section, I'll cover a couple of slides just to talk about the RFP website, which is picoprocurement.com. The RFP website houses all of the supplier and regulatory documents. This is where you can download the rules and the contract in order to review prior to submitting your Part 1 proposal. There's also a data room that has historical data going back to 2006. The data includes hourly load data by class, PLC data by class, and also customer counts. There's additional data series available there if you'd like to take a look. We also have a calendar page that you can refer to, so you can keep on top of the RFP deadlines. There's a Contact Us page, and that's where you can register to receive email announcements from us. Typically, we only send announcements that to remind everyone of deadlines as they approach. And there's also an archive page there. That's where RFP bidders can take a look at documents from past solicitations, and that's also where we post results of the previous solicitations. So feel free to ask questions throughout the process. You can do that by going onto the RFP website, clicking Contact Us, and ask a question. There's a two-day turnaround, and after we respond to the bidder, the FAQ is stripped of any identifying information and posted to the RFP website for the benefit of each bidder. This posting happens every Wednesday, but it's typically more often than that. And you can find these FAQs by clicking on the left-hand navigation bar, the supplier information, and then you'll see a subheading for FAQs there. And on this last slide here, we provide to you our address. This is where you should send or have your bank send the pre-bid letter of credit. During the Part 2 window, you can reach us at this phone number, and you can always email us as well as picoprocurement@nero.com. So that concludes the presentation, and we'd like to open up for any questions you might have.
To submit questions to the presenters, please locate the Q&A panel on the right-hand side of your screen, Select All Panelists in the Send To box, type in your question, and click Send to submit your question. You will now be placed on a music hold for a moment while our presenters review any questions. We will return momentarily.
You may begin.
Great. We received one question asking when the presentation will be posted on the website. That should be up today, no later than tomorrow. And as soon as the audio is ready, that will be posted to the website as well. So we want to thank everyone who participated in the webcast, and we look forward to seeing your proposals.
Thank you. And thank you again for joining us today. This does conclude today's web conference. You may now disconnect.